Hi, my name is Erin Tillman. I'm a dating empowerment coach, speaker, and author known as the Dating Advice Girl. For over 10 years, I've been empowering and coaching singles by helping them improve their social skills, communication skills, and get clear on their dating goals and objectives. Relationships are not one size fits all, but basic consent and respect are important parts of the dating process in order to have an exciting and meaningful connection with others. Listen, learn, and laugh with me on this journey of sex-positive self-discovery. Thanks for listening.
So on this episode of the Dating Advice Girl podcast, I am with former guest from way back, comedian Liana Carrera. Hey, Liana.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show again.
Yay! It's been, how long?
Like 5 years at least.
I know.
Your long-time listeners, one of them is going to be like, I know her.
Yes. And actually, if you scroll back through the archives, you will find our other episode we did together.
It was a good episode. You let me, a stand-up comedian, give dating advice on the radio.
That's right.
I mean, people called in with their problems, and then you were like, hey, Liana, little Liana. I was like new to L.A. I was in like 3 weeks.
Oh my god!
I was so enamored with
that. Yeah, yeah. As we all are at one point.
So green, and then you're like, "Go ahead, you just gave me the mic." It was so funny and nice, and I have to actually go back and listen to it and probably cringe at all my advice.
No, I actually want to listen to it again too. And actually, dang it, we should do that another time because we're probably gonna have time this episode. But I love this idea. Oh, we should revisit that.
Okay.
So, everyone listening, let's learn a little bit about Liana. Here we go. This is her bio. Brace yourself, Liana. I know. She has to listen to it while I read it. Ha ha ha. Okay. Here we go. Liana grew up as the gay kid of a Southern Baptist minister, and her mother and brothers are deaf, which, just a pause in the bio, that alone
is enough.
Wow. So many wow things. Wow. This background propels her to authentically maneuver, create, and connect with a wide array of audiences that have two things in common: the belief that we are more alike than we aren't, and the desire to laugh. The result is a rare find, both as a comedian and as a human being.
Aww.
I know, but this is your bio. Do you know about this? Is this new information?
No, it's not.
Okay,
it's nice to hear it.
We're not done. There's part two. Here we go. Liana has toured as a professional stand-up comedian for a decade. Amazing. She has developed original concept, Boyish on TV. That's the name of a project.
It's just Boyish, one of my projects. Yeah.
BoyishOnTV.com, and just sold her first film to a production company. Congrats, yay!
Thank
amazing.
You.
She recently recorded a stand-up comedy special with Seed and Spark as one of comedy's six rising stars in Los Angeles, and landed her first interview on NPR's The Frame. She is currently one of the hosts of The Q Agenda on LA TV. Welcome, Liana!
Thank you so much. I'm so glad in the last 5 years I've gotten a credit.
You've done more than that, but I know what you're saying. You never know in this town.
Yeah, you never know, but it's been fun.
So, you know, kind of piggybacking on that, so you've been a stand-up comedian for over a decade now. You've been touring and stuff. I saw you were, like, Dominican Republic and, like, a lot of different countries and stuff.
Yeah, no, I toured professionally, like, right out of college.
Okay.
I just, like, started sending my tapes in to... What I would do is I would go to other comics' websites, and wherever they played, I would just email them with my tape. I had a made-up manager. I made her up. Her name was Ann Haley, named after one of my friends from college. And I was just like, hey, I noticed I want to speak to your booker. Here's a new hot up-and-coming stand-up comedian. Here's her tape. And if you want a booker, let me know. Ann. Like, I was just like,
That's so smart.
And it landed me in so many crazy places. Like, it was hard to get booked, which we'll talk about, I think, in the United States. It was easier for me to get booked in Africa. It was easier for me to get booked in Ireland. It was easier for me to get booked in other countries
as
a stand-up comedian paid as a headliner.
Oh, my gosh.
Than it was within our circuit that we have here in the United States, which back then was filled with all white men.
Right.
Which I'm so excited to also talk about.
Discuss, yes.
But I toured 10 years as a stand-up comedian, off and on, and decided to move to Los Angeles five years ago.
From where?
Let me redo my math. I didn't tour for 10 years. I've been a stand-up for 10 years, but I toured for a few years after college, and I moved here 5 years ago from Chicago.
Yes.
Where I put up a one-woman show called Father, Son, and the Holy Gay, where I made fun of my childhood and my Southern Baptist upbringing.
Yeah.
And I sort of kind of packed everything up and moved to L.A. and thought, I can do anything this town has for me. Well, I quickly was humbled, and I realized that I don't want to do everything this town has for me. In addition to not being able to do everything this town has for me, that I have to pick a lane and really hone my skills and work on it. And so that's where we are now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. So what is the lane, stand up comedy, or is it writing, or what is the lane you pick?
So I've always wanted to. I still think stand up is like what I love. I love. There's nothing better than getting on stage and having immediate feedback and the energy and the adrenaline of the stage. I love.
Bless your heart, because I think it's the scariest thing. Like, I love stand up comedy, which is one reason why I wanted to circle back with you. I love talking to comedians. Balls of steel. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, just know that we're scared too, and we do it anyway. I think if you ask a comedian honestly, you know, like, do you get nervous before you get on stage? I mean, if you see, there could be like racetracks paced on the side of comedy stages because of how many, you could see it in people's eyes when they're about to go up. They're pacing back and forth. They're going over material.
Right.
They jump on stage and then they just hope that it clicks. At least speaking for myself, I can hope that it clicks.
Yeah.
And so, what was the question again?
I think we were just kind of generally talking about, what lane you're in now.
So what I wanted to do was, I really want to monetize. I think, like anyone in this industry, we're trying to figure out how to make a living. We're seeing not all of our friends, but some of our friends who made better decisions than we did 10 years ago.
Right.
They have houses that they own and nice, nice things, like maybe a 401k.
Retirement, security.
Well, I love comedy. I really wanted to monetize because my goal has always been to do theaters on the road. So I figured in order to do that, I would have to break nationally.
Yeah.
And then I'd be able to support that
sort
of selling out smarter as opposed to working really hard on the road and being an opener and sitting on couches for the next 10 years,
totally.
Which I just thought I couldn't do. So what I've shifted into really is developing ideas for television and film.
Amazing.
And trying to come up with original concepts that are not represented on television.
Good.
And it's been awesome. I developed a show called Boyish. And there was Amber Ruffin, who was the first black female late night writer on Seth Meyers. She
hilarious.
She executive produced it. Christina Anthony, who's now on Mixed-ish. She was a good co-actor friend of mine who happened to live next door at the time.
Oh my gosh.
And also black, which is cool. I have such strong black women around me. And the third one is Wanda Sykes, who executive produced this show.
I mean,
it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was such a good experience. But it didn't go, which is fine. It was called Boyish, and it was sort of about, the idea was, and interesting you should say, we should go back and look at what we did 5 years ago. Because it was about me, a butch lesbian, who's best friends with a black evangelical straight woman living in Los Angeles.
Hello.
Yeah, and it was great. And
was that the truth? Is that what you were doing?
The truth. That was sort of, I don't know if Christina would identify. I'll let her speak for her.
Yeah.
But she was definitely more like, you look on her Instagram, very vocal about God.
Yeah.
And it was interesting for me because my dad's a Southern Baptist minister.
Right.
So I thought, how cool, let's make it. We were sort of like unlikely friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally.
Totally just kind of. So that's what I really wanted the show to be about. And I'm so excited talking about it now. I want to bring it back to life.
Yay!
But at that time it was about me and my best friend and the pilot, which I would rewrite if I did today, was, I realized, told through my eyes, and I didn't give my best friend character much of an arc. But to be fair, I didn't give anybody an arc because I didn't know how to write. But still, my black best friend had, and that's the thing about today, is that we're all sort of really realizing the responsibilities we have in our work.
Totally.
And I think that we're all sort of fighting to be seen from our perspective.
Right.
That we really have to do a better job with intersectionality.
Absolutely.
But you know what? I want to actually go a little easy on myself.
I was going to say.
Because there's no way that I would have had, you know, not that I'm going to be like, I have black friends, but I had a black executive producer and a black sign-on, so maybe I should just kind of come. And
well, but also, you were the protagonist, so of course it's going to focus more
on
you.
I know.
Hello.
It is. But it was a fun project, and it was amazing to do. And so I just, I've had some successes, is my point.
So you're doing both lanes.
Yeah, not really. I'm not doing stand-up as often. I still do it, like I'm doing show next month, but it's not like LA stand-up comedians.
Yeah.
They hustle. They're doing 3-4 times a week, maybe more times a night.
Yeah.
And I sort of decided I am not going to do that.
Yeah.
But I never did the traditional lane in stand-up comedy anyway.
Yeah.
Because what I did was I did a one-hour comedy show when I was a senior in college.
Okay.
And they filmed me, and I took that footage, and I sent that out to bookies.
So smart.
So I never did the open mic thing anyway.
Wow.
I just got paid right out of college.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, and so I was working out, well, stupid, maybe, but I was working out my jokes. I was learning how to be a comedian in front of live audiences.
Amazing.
And being paid.
It's amazing.
Well, maybe, or stupid, but when we're young, that's the whole thing I was going
to
say.
Listen, you're making money doing what you like to do.
That's true.
I think that's amazing. Whatever the cards you were dealt in that,
yeah.
Freaking take it and good for you.
I mean, I'm telling you, I feel like we're such hustlers in our 20s.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like nothing can stop us, but
yeah.
we just don't have the richness of our material yet.
Sure.
And so we're out there, it's just sort of like we're doing it and we have all the right pictures, we have all the right talking, and you know, but anyway. So yeah,
yes.
So I'm developing for TV and I just wrote a movie. It's a Christmas movie.
Oh.
It's featuring two women.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the first same-sex Christmas movie that would stream on a major streaming network.
The first.
Amazing. The first for two women on a major streaming
I guess
network.
I shouldn't be surprised that it would be the first.
Well, yeah, isn't that weird? Well, I think there's a couple indies.
Okay.
There's one indie that I know of right now. But I
yeah.
mean, it's for, like, someone like a big name network to get behind
totally.
It is the goal.
But I feel like I shouldn't be surprised because Christmas, right? If we're talking about Christmas, like, the religious holiday, I guess if people are conservative in their celebration of that holiday, then they wouldn't necessarily, their go-to wouldn't be a gay couple,
no.
a lesbian couple.
Even though Christmas
you know.
Is like the gayest holiday that ever existed. I mean, people are like flashing sweatshirts and singing carols in the street.
Oh my God.
You know what I mean? Harmonize. Like, it's gay.
Yeah.
It's a gay holiday.
Flashing lights. And
yeah.
The,
so
it's so, true.
So hopefully that movie sells and I'll be able to push that through.
Oh my gosh, this is exciting. I want to, let's, please keep us posted on that, because that sounds really
we'll
great.
Keep everybody posted.
Yes,
on
you
that.
Better,
yes.
on all the things.
Yes.
Okay, so, let's circle back, because I think we both have the gift of gab here.
Mm-hmm.
No sorries, no, you're like a dream person to interview, because some people aren't as open and outward with all their thoughts and feelings. So thank you for being open and honest.
Well, I haven't been on Facebook all day, so I had to have something to get out my feelings. So
well, this is perfect.
It.
So thank you for storing it up for us. Okay, so, you know, in terms of, you kind of touched on this, you said we'd circle back to this, you saw some of the questions before, but stand-up comedy, you were saying how it usually is a very white male medium. I love, like I said before, I love stand-up. I go to a lot of the clubs here, you know, Laugh Factory, Comedy Store, all the places, and now, lately, I feel like in the last year or so, you will see more of, like, there's a woman, there might be a gay woman, usually white, but you really don't see much variety other than that. I mean, so what have you noticed, like, in stand-up, being a comedian? Have you noticed a shift as well? A small shift? Or what do you, what did it tell us? Tell us.
I think there's a shift in consciousness, a little shift.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a shift in consciousness, but I think just like in television, there's a lot of talk and no action.
Yeah.
In terms of actual application of when we talk about diversity and inclusivity.
Right.
And the television industry just came out with a study that said there are 80% of writers in television writers' rooms are still white men.
80%.
And 90% are white in general.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very small percentage of women writers,
right.
and a very small percentage of people of color writers,
right.
even though right now you would think, because of
I
all
know.
The shows that are out.
So many.
Yes, like
so many shows.
Vita and so many shows, and that we would have more representation in the writers' room, but
mm-hmm.
there's not even that there.
Like, that's shocking to me. I mean, I can speak a little bit to this, like, working in the commercial world. I've done a lot in the TV commercial realm, and the number of commercials I've worked on where, as, like, in front of a camera or behind the camera, I'm, like, the only black person or black female on set. And when you see, like, Video Village and you see, like, the agency that's, you know, producing a commercial or making the decisions, it's literally almost always all white people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when it's an all-black cast in a commercial, it's still only white people. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And then sometimes you'll see certain decisions that are being made, or I would, like, as a black female, and seeing the black cast, I'm like, oh my God, like, they don't see what they're doing. Like, remember the whole, like, H&M? There's been a couple companies that have had some fiascos with marketing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was like, H&M had, like, a monkey, a little boy with a monkey, something like that. And it's like, those kind of things, it's like, that's why it's so important, to your point, to have some level of diversity in the room, in the executive level, whatever, making decisions.
I think what's changed, and I think
yeah.
you're absolutely right, I think what's changed is our ability to find each other. we're ability to find each other, right? So I think what's changed is that female comics don't feel like we're the only ones out there anymore when we're the only one in the lineup. Whereas technology, Facebook, social media sites have brought us together.
Yeah.
So we can go, hold up. What are you experiencing? What shows have you experienced that are good to women or that are not good to women?
Yeah.
Or that are not booking women?
Right.
There was a major comedy club in Los Angeles recently. Mm. Major. Like, mm-hmm. That said they aren't booking female comedians because they can't find any. Well, we're
what?
Here.
What? Wait, and this recently?
Was like, yeah, like 4 months ago. This was a...
What?
I'm in a female, women in comedy, I should say, Facebook group.
Yeah.
And they were like, guys, they said, guys, girls, they say whatever they call it. Ladies, chicas,
right.
They can't find female comedians. Well, no. And so anyway,
it's insanity.
Or whatever you call it. And we all were like, what? And, you know, because there's plenty that are working
three
times a night here in Los Angeles.
Of course.
So hundreds. I think this coupled out. It's a big group.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'll still get emails from bookies. They're like, hey, do you know any funny women? It's like,
are you serious?
Yeah. So
oh
I think that, yeah, we are seeing a desire for consciousness to
sure,
shift.
Sure, sure.
But it's just a small on the surface sort of crack.
Do you think, in your opinion, do you think that they were saying we can't find any because they really couldn't? Or do you think they were saying that to cover their butts so they didn't have to hire any or book any?
I think it's true that they couldn't find any or book any. I think it's both true. Because I think that especially like people who are staffing writer's room or staffing mm-hmm. shows, they're mm-hmm. going to turn to their friend group first.
Totally.
And if as a friend group, you don't carry diversity in your friendships, then a lot of times, I don't think it's like a purposeful thing. Like, let's not hire a woman. Let's not hire a person of color. I think it's like, oh, well, who do I know and who do I trust? Well, I trust Bob.
Sure.
I knew Bob from 6 shows.
Right.
And this thing, and so I'm going to bring Bob in.
And it's easy to hire Bob.
It's easy
to
hire Bob.
Because I know him already.
Because
they know
him and trust
him.
And in this town, it's about immediacy. So we have a pipeline problem.
Yeah.
And so it's...
Well said.
Systematic.
Yeah.
And so we have to figure out, well, just because you see two women on a comedy show every once in a while, are we good? Or is that like a weird Band-Aid? And I think it's a weird Band-Aid.
Yeah, I think you're right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it's kind of moving forward a little bit, but still in the realm of comedians and stand-up and hard times, whatever. Some comedians usually... By the way, for all my male listeners or masculine listeners, this is not meant to bash men or anything. We're giving our perspectives in terms of what our experiences are.
If you could see me, I'm a masculine listener, so we can't be bashing masculine listeners.
Right, absolutely. This is true. So some comedians, I've heard a lot of male comedians in particular, more, let's just say men comedians, cis male comedians, have said that it's a hard time in history to be a stand-up comedian. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think part of it is the Me Too movement, I feel like, mm-hmm. but also there's just a lot of things where maybe, before, I can't wait to hear what you're going to say about this, but before we go there, I want to say, like, you know, I've been in an interesting position as a fan of stand-up. I am also somewhat of an activist. I'm someone that's all for equal rights, human rights, all the things. And so I felt conflicted in some way sometimes about laughing at some jokes from certain comedians and things. Because it feels like it kind of goes against my activism side and stuff. There is this weird conflict I've felt as a viewer, as a fan. And so, in some ways, I do understand how it could... I think comedians might have to be a little more creative with their comedy because of all of that. But I do feel like sometimes it's kind of like, woe is me. Like, I can't do the jokes I always did because someone's going to be offended. And I'm like, okay, you need to, like, just maybe work harder and make your jokes better. Anyway, that's from the voice of someone who is not a stand-up comedian.
Right.
So what do you think? Tell us.
So I think that who is saying that comedy is dead or comedy is, you can't be funny anymore because everyone's too PC? Who is saying that?
Right.
It comes down to, besides Dave Chappelle, who I still feel like hopefully we can pull in back into the, you know, back into the reins of, like, where we're all standing.
I hear you.
He was there once. So, besides Dave Chappelle, what you have is a series of white men, that straight white men, that are saying that, oh, I feel so terrible, comedy is dead, oh no, liberals are killing comedy, which is what you have.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not. I mean, like you said, there's a demand that comedy has always been about who holds the power and who doesn't hold the power, and giving voice to people who don't hold the power.
Yeah.
That's why white straight men, they can't make jokes jokes about gay people at the making gay people the butt of the joke as cleanly anymore.
Right.
Because gay people don't hold the power. You know, we can still be fired and dozens of states.
Right, there's still marginalization.
Yeah, there's still
right.
gay people being killed for
right.
who they are.
Exactly.
Attacked for who they are.
Right.
So to make fun of someone
gay,
being
trans,
gay and that be the
exactly.
punchline,
yeah.
that's icky. It's
right.
icky to audiences, which it should be.
Right.
What I find interesting, so these are white men that are saying this, right? But what I find interesting is if we go back in time, let's reverse this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about all of the black female comedians.
Yeah.
Who were performing, like behind you I have Mom's Mabley records. All
oh,
of these
yes.
are women in comedy
oh,
records.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah. So imagine her
yes.
during segregation
right.
going into white audiences
yeah.
and playing white audiences
mm-hmm.
in a way that was smart enough to not have repercussions when she walked across off the stage.
So yes.
That is comedy.
Amazing.
That is understanding that there is power structure, that you have to be smarter than the audience, you have
yeah.
to surprise the audience, and you have to be better than what is happening around us.
Totally.
It's not just about commenting. It's not just about being a racist.
Totally.
It's not just about white people are this or whatever. That's not the joke. The joke is in the truth
mm.
that elevates people who are disadvantaged to a more powerful position or
yeah.
equal position.
Yeah.
And so I don't think comedy's changed at all. I think our
hmm.
awareness has changed. I
mm-hmm.
think our understanding of who people are has changed.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a choice to be stagnant
yeah.
in your humor or to keep it moving and to evolve and to realize that you can't take the simple joke anymore. You can't do the gay, like, wrist thing in the air. Or maybe
right.
you can if you're gay. So
right.
there's really nothing you can't do if you can do it in a way that's smart and
right.
in a way that lands.
Right.
So, no, do I think it's killer comedy? No, I'm excited about the state of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
It's more like real, more feminine, more, you know, it's only up from here.
Yeah, I agree. Oh my God, like, Liana, I feel like that was, like, literally, like, people need to, like, re-listen to what you just said there, the answer to that question, because you gave so many really clear nuggets that I've not heard anyone really say in terms of explaining this whole I can't be funny anymore thing.
Wow.
I mean, but really, though, seriously, no, but
yeah.
really, though, I mean, I feel like you broke it down. It's the whole, I did hear someone else say something like, you can't, it's just hard right now. You can't, it's not okay and not funny to punch down when you're doing comedy right now. If you're punching down at someone
yeah.
telling a joke.
Yeah.
And you basically are saying the same thing, but you just said it so much more eloquently than I did. And the other person, but I mean, no, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, it makes sense to me. I just feel like, back to kind of what I said before, like, you just, comedians just have to be a little more creative.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, your Mom's Mabley example is so on point. It's like, if someone can literally go into an audience, speak to an audience, perform for an audience that looks nothing like them,
mm-hmm.
and have them rolling and laughing without mm-hmm. offending anybody,
mm-hmm.
like, it's obviously possible.
And it's not because she was PC, you know?
Right,
she
right.
No,
right.
it was probably the most un-PC thing you could do,
right.
you know, is go in front of a white audiences and
yeah.
make them laugh. You
yeah.
know, it was, you know, it's your life.
Yeah.
Life or death in many
right.
cases. And I hate to, like, bring everything back to race, but I'm that person. And if you're mad about that, you can stop listening now. But I
or
think,
maybe
I,
you should really listen
yeah.
hard.
But I think what I'm thinking is that white men are so used to being treated as individuals,
mm-hmm.
and people of color and everyone else are so used to being just stereotyped as a one large group where
yeah.
we're being asked to speak for a specific incident that happened.
Right.
Or
and speak on behalf of your whole
that
race.
Happened,
yeah.
That they are individually offended.
Yeah.
So if you say something like all white men, you're talking about systematic, all
right.
white men, then you have listeners going, I'm not that way. Well, we ain't talking about you. We're talking about systems. And if you're not that way, then why are you getting so mad?
Right.
Like,
sure.
you know, so this joke that you can't make is not
right.
because you are someone that we're trying to cancel.
Yeah.
It's because you are someone that is making the joke and needs to be called out to be educated.
Yeah.
It's not because you're the don't, like, stand up like your manhood is on the line because
yeah.
you can't make a joke
right.
about trans people or whatever.
Right.
Like,
right.
think of it, we're here to help you.
Yeah.
If you're funny, we'll laugh.
Right.
That's it.
I know. And that's what I said about, I forget who it was, somebody recently, I'm like, oh, I think it was the guy who was supposed to be on Saturday Night Live and then he got, like,
oh,
removed
yeah.
from
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know, like, well, first of all, what he said was offensive, but also it wasn't funny at all.
Yeah.
I'm like, your comedy wasn't good, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not even funny.
Right.
Like, so anyway, that's a whole other spiel.
Yeah.
Okay, we gotta move it forward, because again, we both have the gift of gab. Here we go. So, because this is a dating podcast, have you used, or do you use, have you used any of your own dating or relationship life in your material when you write or do stand-up?
Absolutely. I feel like I use my failed relationships a lot because I can hear...
Taylor Swift?
Yeah, Taylor Swift. Yeah, I'm Taylor Swift comedy. No. I just feel like you learn so much about life by what you do wrong more than by what you do right. And I love writing dialogue that sort of reminds me of those moments where I made wrong choices, where I heard things that I believed that weren't truth, and I mistook them for truth. So I'm able
You gotta be easy on yourself. Just as a dating coach, real quick, you have to be easy on yourself there. You don't know. When you're in it, you don't really know.
Thank you for that. But
no, seriously.
It's some of those, but it's the dynamics of my real-life relationships that I've sort of... Of course, we're all writers. We glean. But in any style of writing, writing reality is... kind of boring.
Yeah.
It's boring. It doesn't even make sense half the time. We don't make sense half the time. So sort of heightening and exploring, but learning how to have my characters relate to each other in a way that I related through the ways that I relate has been an interesting exercise. And yes, I do. I've done stand-up and I incorporate my, you know, jokes in my stand-up. If you watch my special on Seed and Spark, you know, I have a whole thing about how, should I just direct them to it? I feel like...
Do it.
Seed and Spark. It's Liana Carrera, LiannaCarrera. If you watch it, I have a quip that I made about dating a married woman. And I turn it on its head and I make it funny.
Yeah.
But just like using, like, what was I thinking? Using real, without being like, what was I thinking? She's married.
Right. Okay. I know, we could go on a whole other tangent there.
Watch the special. And then you write me, you message me on Instagram, tell me if I nailed it or not.
I love it. I love it. No, it's so good. I mean, how you, especially in LA, I feel like dating in LA, there's just endless, like, material here, dating here. And shout out to New York and some other cities. Actually, shout out to the small towns, because there's a lot of drama in the small towns sometimes, too. I mean, I feel like there's endless material. Have you ever used stand-up comedy or comedy to win over someone while asking them out on a date or on a date? And better yet, pulling from my own experience, have you ever asked someone out while you were on stage from the, like...
Yeah, I did that.
I was kind of kidding, but you have.
I have. That was when I was young and dumb. Remember, this should be called, remember when Liana was 20?
I love it.
I was performing, actually, my one-hour special in college, and I had the hots for a professor, and...
Oh, no. Liana.
Thank God, you know, she said, no! You know what I mean? But I still was so, like, you know, I was a senior in college, you know, do you remember how cocky we were? And I remember I made a joke, and I flirted with her from stage, and kept it moving, but I was like, Liana, what are you doing?
Okay.
So yes, I have done that, like, terribly, which is terrible, but she's great, we're still friends to this day.
Aww.
Yeah, it was very funny.
that is hilarious.
She knows who she is, and so does all of my college.
I love it.
Because it was embarrassing. and then, God, what else? I did send my current partner, girlfriend, I should say, but almost partner. We've been together over a year now.
Aww. Sweet.
But I sent her the special, hoping she would really think I was funny, because you want people to believe in your art and your
Absolutely.
Work.
Absolutely.
And if they don't, you know, why would she buy into dating an artist in Los Angeles? She
Completely.
Didn't believe in me. And so
right.
it was kind of a big moment for me to send her the special on Stephen Spark, which I swear to God I'm not promoting, but I guess I
am. No, you also watch it.
Yeah. she was like, I love this, and it, you know, so, yeah.
And you were like, heart flutters.
But she doesn't get me to see me do it ever, stand up, because it's so rare, but I should do it more often, so at least she can see it.
I know,
but
see?
I like how Ellen didn't let Portia see her perform till, like, last week, till she did that special Unrelated.
Oh, wait,
like,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Portia hadn't seen her for 10 years. Not that I'm
That's
Ellen.
That's crazy.
But I would love some Ellen money, and so I could say, oh, I wish my girl could see me do
a You know what? Manifest that, Liana. I'm with you.
Special.
That's right. Exactly. I love it. No, it's so funny. I was not expecting you to say that, but I actually, once got asked out from the audience, and it was with my mom. We were at the Laugh Factory. This comedian said something like, shout out, where's the black girls out there? And I said, whoop, whoop. And he looked over and he's like, from the stage, he's like, oh, you're cute, something, we should go out sometime. And I thought he was kidding, and literally after he got off stage, he, like, asked me out. He ended up being a little
Yeah,
anyway, it didn't work out.
He's a stand-up comedian. But he was, because when you have the mic, I mean, there is a feeling of, not superiority, but safety.
Yeah.
You have a feeling of safety, and that you can be and do and ask things and say things. That's why when a heckler stands up and thinks they're going to take out a stand-up, it's funny.
Yeah,
because, no, you're not. Like, this is our craft.
Yes.
And you don't have the mic. And sometimes you even give the heckler the mic, and he chokes because suddenly he has power.
Right.
Which he thought he wanted, but he didn't want.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's probably where that comes from. Because offstage comedians are, you know, more... I mean, I think we have more
introspective.
Humility. I think I can't even say as a whole because it's not
deep,
true.
Brooding,
because there are comedians who are always on. You know what I mean? And
sure.
It's like painful to even be around them, and I'm not that. But you know.
No, you're delightful off stage.
Yeah,
I know.
Thank you.
Okay. Here we go. We almost made it through. This is so great. But really, this could be like an hour long thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you're
do you have to cut it? Is that a thing?
I mean, I just, attention spans. I know, you're, like, all listening to us talk about the, like, was, like, now, like, broken the fourth wall or whatever. But, no, I mean, just, I think that everyone just has limited time, so I just like to keep it around 20 minutes.
Sure.
It's okay, we're already over, but it's great. Here we go. Okay, so tell us about your new show, The Q Agenda, on LA TV.
Oh, yeah.
What is this?
Please
tell
watch
us.
LA TV. It's in 42 states and 24 states and 42 million households.
Nice.
And it's called... The Q Agenda, and it's basically a queer version of The View for Latinx topics.
Amazing.
So we talk about you know, the state of sort of, you know, LGBTQIA and Latina,
mm-hmm.
Latinx things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. We get a topic. We talk about news topics. We talk about celebrities. We have celebrities on the show.
Yeah.
That are just opening up to us, and we, you know, I'm always bringing the conversation to a real level, which the producers,
I love it.
They like or not. Like, we had a draft. It's funny because my co-host, who's awesome,
yeah,
his name is Enrique, and he is so polished and wonderful. And when he speaks, he knows how to talk about the celebrity gossip.
Yeah,
he knows how to talk about like this is fabulous, and can you believe what happened? And like, and I'm more of like the serious co-host. He brought me on as a comedian, so it's
right.
Kind of funny.
No, totally.
So he'll be like, "Did you hear what happened on the what's it called the Real Housewives? The
yeah.
drama
right.
coming up next." And I'll be like, "Liana, what did you think about them overhearing in some drama that week?" And I'll be like, I don't know. I don't watch The Housewives. You know what I mean? And the producers are like, "You have to say something." I'm like, "Fine." So like, another example is we had a drag queen on the show who was wonderful on RuPaul Drag Race. She's amazing. And
yeah.
they were talking, like, makeup tips and how the experience
I love
was.
It.
And then
yes.
I was like, can we just take a moment to talk about the political nature of drag and why people decide to dress in drag
yeah,
and what
yeah.
that means?" And they would look at
they're
me
like,
and the producers actually started laughing. Because they're, like, laughing. Because they're like, "Well, keep it going." You know? So I'm, like, the serious, like, lesbian killjoy. But I still have humor. I just think it's funny because every topic I'm like, "How can I Rachel Maddow this?" Like,
no, totally.
How can I talk about this in a way that applies to our souls and not just to, like, you know, mindless celebrity gossip? So it's a funny dynamic.
Yeah.
Really
I actually love that, though. I love that because I do feel like on a lot of talk shows, like a lot of the talk shows, it is more happy, not too deep, trying to keep it, you know, I think there it's good, a good balance to have depth. That
yeah.
you bring, and
yeah.
then the lighthearted or like celebrity angles and all of a sudden.
Yeah.
I think it's a great mix.
Well,
you
thank
know?
You. But
come on, producers.
Yeah. No,
we like it.
No, they're behind it, I think. And then ending, they gave me like 12 episodes, so we're behind it.
Yay.
But ending this now how we began, that's why I was such a bad, when I first got to LA,
yeah.
I thought I could do anything, and then I ended up hosting.
Right.
And I was hosting red carpets, and I got to do like the Emmys.
Yes.
And the MTV Music Awards.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized I was a bad host, because when I was on the carpet,
yeah.
and I was asking people questions, I didn't care about what they were wearing.
Gotcha.
I didn't care
yeah.
about their latest
totally.
Project. I had Mindy Kaling once, and all I wanted to do was ask her about her mother, the memory of her mother, who
oh.
was a gynecologist,
right.
and that's why she became an the show, she was a gynecologist
yes.
in honor of her mother. I wanted so badly
but
to
I think that's an
that.
Amazing question.
No, but the producers at that time
oh,
were like, no,
yeah.
you don't talk to Jane Lynch about her hearing loss on the red carpet. You know, you don't talk about how that impacts her life.
No,
and
totally.
Like, oh. And so that's what I'm talking about. You first get to LA and it paints you and you think you can do all these things.
Right.
And then you realize, you know what? My brand has always been my
yeah.
heart.
Yeah.
And you try to make it shiny and something different. And
right.
if I would have done that back then,
yeah.
what would have happened? Like, maybe I would have broken in a different direction.
Yeah. No,
because
absolutely.
Because I was asking deeper questions on
right.
the red carpet.
Right.
But I was new and young.
See,
anyway.
But I gotta, piggyback on that. Because, I mean, I still do red carpets here
yeah.
and there.
Yeah.
And I don't go the what are you wearing angle either.
Good.
Like, I mean, especially because I'm getting content for my dating and consent podcast,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But it's like, I try to ask things that are still a little bit light, but still aren't the typical question, because they get bored.
Yeah.
It's the same questions are being asked. Anyway, that's a whole
And we've evolved together.
Exactly.
You and I, culture, have evolved.
Totally.
So right now, it's really beautiful. There's a lot of people, I think, more people doing it now. Amy Poehler.
Totally.
Smart Girls. They ask real questions.
Yes.
On the carpet.
Yes.
So people are doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Let's
yeah.
just say that we were thinking about this beforehand. Okay. Okay. What is the, we're wrapping it up. What's the favorite part of what you do right now? Is there a certain thing that stands out to you that like just brings you so much joy that you
yeah.
do?
I'm getting to the point now where I've been in LA long enough where I'm knowing people who are finally seeing their dreams come true.
Yeah.
That I've been here in LA.
Totally.
With.
Yeah.
It sounds like a stupid thing to say.
No,
but
I love
it's
it.
Like, it's like, God is in the neighborhood.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It just feels good to see good people get their pay.
1,000,000%.
And so, do I know what my lane's going to be? No. But am I working hard every day? Do I feel like the richness of my voice is just getting started? Yes.
Yay.
Am I glad that I didn't weirdly break in my 20s and become a reality show star? Like, no offense, reality show stars. Yes, because that was a path I could have taken.
Totally.
So I
Same.
Feel like there's a purpose for all of us,
mm-hmm.
and we just need to stay our course.
Yeah.
And so I'm finding tremendous joy in like being scared shitless and being happy and feeling like I'm close even though I may not be.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
yeah.
I feel like for me, I always go back to gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
Just being grateful for the things I've done and grateful for whatever's coming. I planted a bunch of seeds on along the way,
yeah,
just like
exactly.
you have, and just like
and it could be harvest
on
season
and,
at
yeah,
some point.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And
right. And
so.
Then keep doing it until you stop enjoying. Until you start hating it.
Yeah.
Once
no,
you're
for real.
Really over it, that's when I think you need to get out. Because I think we both know people in this
mm-hmm.
town that's like, oh no, they might need to stop.
Yeah.
Or take a break.
Well,
right?
And I think too, what people don't realize is that just because you get one big break, that you're going to get another one and another one. And you might be back. You know, you're the hot new thing, and then you're back to square one. And so,
totally.
So of course, we all want what's best, but it's just a different journey being in LA than I thought it was going to be when I first got here.
Totally.
It's been humbling, and it's been wonderful, and it's been more enriching. Than
yeah.
I could have ever imagined.
Oh,
so
such a positive
yeah.
attitude.
You
I love
to.
It.
You
Liana, spread the positivity.
Yes, thank you.
Seriously.
Thank you for
okay.
Me.
Well, thanks for being here. I know,
yes.
that was it. I know, your instincts were good. This is
yeah.
the end of the show.
I know. You know what? I gotta stop ending. I end things. I had an interview with a showrunner.
Yeah.
A big show.
Yeah.
And it became clear that I wasn't, like, they were looking for a very specific type of person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it became clear that I was not that person.
Right.
So I just said, well, thanks for your time. And, like, she started. Laughing, she's like, "Are you ending it? We could talk about something." I'm like, "Well, I don't want to waste your time." She was like, "No," because I had to speak languages I don't speak. Like, it was very
yeah.
obviously not.
Oh my god!
Live. So anyway, I gotta stop doing that.
You're like, "Who's interviewing you here?"
She was like, "What?" I was like, "But thank you for the opportunity." My manager's gonna hear that.
Hate
me.
Oh,
but,
see.
You know, no,
no,
it's
but
good.
I
we
think
still talk though.
One of your,
and I, so we're good.
See, no,
yeah.
amazing. And I think one of the things that's endearing about you, and I'll throw myself in the same boat, is that people like the honesty.
Yeah.
They might, how about this? They respect it. They might not love it.
Mm-hmm.
They might not know what to do with it. But I think they respect the crap out of the honesty
yeah.
and the forthrightness and the like. Well. I see what's happening here, and I'm going to see my way out. You know, whatever. Okay,
well,
Liana. Yes.
Yeah.
Liana, tell us where we can find out more about you. Website, social media,
yeah.
all the things.
So my name is Liana Carrera, Liana. Carrera like the Porsche. And I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter not very often. And I'm on Facebook ranting and raging against the Trump administration, like everyone else you know in your life who's desperately trying to stay sane. Find me on my Facebook fan page and my website, and yeah, keep stay tuned.
Yay!
Yeah,
I know you're doing it. I know. I love to see how people progress through the years. So
yeah.
Great job, you're doing it. Keep
Thank
doing
you,
it.
You too,
I'm following you. I'm a fan.
I know,
you know.
You too,
so. Yay! Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And now it's time for the Consent Corner: tips, advice, and insights from my book, The Consent Guidebook, Chapter 5. Holding others accountable. If someone you know personally has pushed someone's boundaries, whether it's a friend, family member, or colleague, it is absolutely our obligation to speak up rather than be silent about their behavior. A great way to get their attention and help them understand how their behavior might be potentially hurtful is to ask them how they would feel if the roles were reversed. Encouraging someone to stop and take a moment to picture themselves in the shoes of the person on the receiving end of their aggressive behavior could be a helpful way to put things into perspective. You could say something like, "Hey friend, that thing you said or did to that person in the bar was kind of weird. Let's talk about it. I'm your friend and I love you, and I don't think that best represents who you are." If you show your concern by making it about them and wanting them to be better, they might be more apt to listen. You might feel conflicted if you become aware that your friend or family member has crossed someone's boundaries. It is normal to feel conflicted. If you love them, the best thing you can do is lovingly hold them accountable. If you want to support them, but you have conflicted feelings about their behavior, maybe the healthiest way for you to help them is to support them from far away. Enabling or ignoring their behavior will only add to the problem and potentially create a situation where others could be harmed. None of this is easy. These conversations are uncomfortable for everyone. We need to become more comfortable with the discomfort. With practice, this will get easier. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to our fellow brothers and sisters. We owe it to our community. We owe it to society. It's for the greater good. We're all in this together. Together, we can do better. The Consent Guidebook is available in paperback and ebook on Amazon, Google Books, iBook, and wherever ebooks are sold. For more info, go to theconsentguidebook.com.